Bill, it's time for us to learn something today.
I'm ready.
On the Bill and Wendy Show. All right, where do we begin? Muslims and those perceived to be Muslims get abuse. They get harassed, and I don't think we understand. So we're going to find out about Islamophobia right now. And Tahira Ahmad is with us. Hi, Tahira.
Hi, thank you so much for having me today.
Sure.
Absolutely. Now, you spoke at Northwestern University, which unfortunately has already happened. We got wind of this after the fact. That was last week?
Yeah, we actually had a rally in which many different groups from the community right out here in the north side in the Evanston, Skokie, Morton Grove, Wilmette, all of those communities got together and rallied within Evanston at, Fountain Square. And we basically gathered together to stand, against hate and violence throughout the country and the abuse and the physical assaults that are ongoing.
I have one of my son's friends is Muslim, and if, he's walking around and he hears somebody say something about Muslim people, he's like, my friend is Muslim. And these people go, oh, and they don't understand that there could be good Muslims.
So, I think you're right, Wendy. I think post 9/11, there has been an increase, as we know from both Gallup and Pew Research, that the anti-Islamic rhetoric has actually increased nearly 47% of Americans in a Gallup poll said that they are uncomfortable with their Muslim neighbors or that they would not feel comfortable with a Muslim neighbor, which, of course, is kind of startling as, 1 in 10 doctors in this country are actually Muslim. So you're more likely to be healed by a Muslim in this country than be killed by a Muslim.
By far, it's not even close.
So those are just the facts. But I think you're right that, when many people, I think, are when they look at nearly 22% of our news media coverage is about the Middle East, global politics, and radical Islam. So, of course, some people may be relating that to the average Muslim that lives in this country. And so some of that fear, of course, is understandable, but not excusable. And so I think what we're trying to do in the larger communities is to build a sense of competency, community, and collaboration. And that's the kind of effort that I think we need help with, and just getting folks to know each other. Like your son knows someone, and he's able to say, hey, guess what? I know this guy. He's my friend. He's a Muslim. He's great. And I think many Americans know. They're just not sure how to have that conversation.
Would you go so far as to say it's almost like a witch hunt as people are trying to determine who could and who could not be a Muslim? It's almost reached that kind of a proportion, hasn't it?
Well, what's interesting is that a lot of the hate crimes that we're looking at now that are being reported actually are, folks that look outwardly as Muslim. So women who wear hijab, for example, the head veil, they have experienced a lot of hate. I myself, a couple of months ago, I'm sure you heard of the incident on United Airlines with the Diet Coke can, which, of course, United Airlines eventually apologized for.
Could you explain that?
Yeah,
tell people who don't know what that is. What happened there exactly?
So, I travel quite often, and I was on a flight to go speak at a conference for Kids for Peace, which raises, peaceful dialogue between Israeli and Palestinian youth. I asked for a can of diet soda, like I always do, and I asked for it to be a closed beverage can. The flight attendant refused to give me one, but then she proceeded to give the gentleman sitting next to me a closed beverage can. And then when I asked her why I'm being refused a closed beverage can, she said, "We are unauthorized to give passengers unopened beverage cans because they may use it as a weapon on the plane."
But why wouldn't the guy who got the Coke can that wasn't open use it as a weapon? I mean,
well, so that's when I, well, you're clearly discriminating because you gave the gentleman sitting next to me an unopened beverage can. She realized that. She picked it up, opened it for him. And as she was putting it back down, she said, "It's because you would use it as a weapon."
Oh,
and at
my
that
God.
Point, of course, she, crossed the line, and I was a little bit flabbergasted. I looked around. I asked folks did anyone witness what she just said to me? And I said, how dare you say that I would use it as a weapon? And a man sitting two seats across from me said, you Muslim, shut the F up. I, of course, couldn't believe that. So I leaned over and he said, you know, you would use it as a weapon, so shut the F up. And I actually posted about, you know, I had Wi-Fi in the plane. I put it on my social media page. It became a viral story. You know, it was all over. Almost every news media network had covered it, including WGN News Network. And, you know, United Airlines did officially apologize. They said that the flight attendant will no longer serve on their flights, that they do not stand by discriminatory behavior. But this kind of just gives you a very small example of the amount of hate that's out there. And unfortunately, you know, folks that are well-trained in diversity training or even feeling like they have the license to just say whatever they want. And I think that's the problem, is that we are at a point right now in this country where, you know, I don't want to mention certain political, you know, parties, but I think certain people have given folks the license to hate others in the rhetoric of their speeches. And it's becoming more and more prevalent. You know, 2 weeks ago, Northwestern's Alice Millar Chapel was vandalized with anti-Semitic, you know, anti-Islamic and homophobic, I mean, what have you. I mean, it was racial slurs against almost everyone. And then, of course, there was a Trump sign put up as well. So there's, I think what I'm trying to say is that this hate and this negativity is really going to destroy, you know, several communities, not just one community. So this is not just about Islamophobia. This is about, you know, respecting everyone. You know, the putting up anti-Semitic, images is not okay. And I think as a community, we have to come together and stand against this kind of hate and bigotry.
We have Tahara Ahmad on the line with us, Associate Chaplain, Director of Interfaith Engagement at Northwestern University. Tahara, I want to ask you about something. Obviously, this hate comes from fear. And you have to understand that as well. Not all Muslims are terrorists, but you mentioned 9/11. All the 9/11 terrorists were Muslim. So it's ignorance and it's fear. What do you do to try and show people that you guys don't approve with what ISIS is doing? Despite maybe having the same faith, you're not behind what they're doing. How do you explain this to people, and how do you make that fear and hatred go away?
Right. I think that's a very legitimate concern. I agree with you that Muslims, whenever, you know, these kinds of attacks happen, in fact, many Muslims feel like they have to apologize on behalf of the 1.6 billion Muslims around the world. When, you know, it's unfortunate that if someone who is of the Christian faith, which, as we know in this country, particularly majority of the violence and hate crimes actually have been, you know, committed by white men who have guns and have actually caused a lot of damage in communities. But we don't hold them accountable based on their faith. We say, oh, this person had a mental health condition. Or even in the cases where they have used scripture to commit some of these acts of crime, we, you know, recognize that not all Christians are, you know, out to kill people and violent. In fact, Christianity's roots are based in the concept of love, and that Jesus, you know, Christ taught love. So we understand that, I think. And so within what...
Wait, and I have to tell you, whenever someone has been committed a crime, you never hear a Christian. You never hear that. I never realized that till you just mentioned that.
Right. And so I think that double standard is, you know, obviously unfair. But I do think, I do agree with you that Muslims have to stand up against any acts of violence that has been perpetrated under the name of Islam. And I guarantee you that there have been many, you know, for example, right after 9/11, there was a million Muslim march in Washington, D.C. No one really talks about it. No one even knew that that had happened. And some of that has to just do with how the media covers some of these stories. But there have been multiple countless efforts on behalf of the larger Muslim community to say, we do not stand by this. This is not what our faith teaches us. You know, in many ways, these people have hijacked our faith, and that it is not representative of our beliefs. Like, we are here in this country. Many of us are born and raised here. You know, we serve in the military. There were people, there were actually Muslims who died in the 9/11 attacks. There were firefighters who, you know, risked their lives who were Muslim in the 9/11 attacks. So I think folks don't know that. So knowing our stories, knowing the depth of the kind of sacrifices that have also been made by Muslims, I think is, you know, something that we need to talk about.
We have to take a break here. Tahira Ahmad, we have people who have questions and comments for you, Tahira, so we will continue. 312-981-7200. Islamophobia, it's a real thing. It's out there, and we're trying to learn about it right now. It's Bill Left, Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN. We are learning about Islamophobia. There was a discussion that happened at Northwestern last week, and on the line with us right now is Tahira Ahmad, Associate Chaplain, Director of Interfaith Engagement at Northwestern. And Tahira, we have people that have comments and questions, and is that what we're trying to do? We're trying to have a discussion here?
Sure, absolutely. I'm open to having a conversation with folks. I think that's really important.
It is important. And are you cool with people asking you questions instead of looking at you in a bad light or saying something terrible to you? Wouldn't it be better if they came up and said, listen, I got a question for you. I don't understand how this works. Would that be better?
Yeah, I think we need to be able to understand each other. But, you know, I think the main thing is respect and empathy. And if that is, you know, somewhere, a place that we could start, then that's wonderful. Because certainly, you know, anyone who is having a conversation, I think it's important to have that sense of respect for the other and the other perspective, as well as understanding that, you know, coming from a place of empathy and learning about the other, I think, is what would be best in moving forward.
I don't think anybody's nice to anybody anymore.
Right, those days are over. Yeah, those are over. When let's say Donald Trump says we got to restrict Muslims from coming into the United States, what does that do to you when you hear stuff like that?
Oh, a couple of things. You want to unpack that a little bit. Well, first of all, I'm kind of curious which kind of Muslim Donald Trump is, you know, because he seems to have no problems with the rich Muslims that he has lots of, you know, interesting investments and deals with in the Middle East, which I find kind of interesting, to say the least. You know, when you hear things like that, it reminds me of the kind of, you know, the waves of hate and hateful rhetoric that our country has gone through. There was a time in this country that there was hate, you know, perpetrated against Catholics, and then, you know, against the Jewish community, against, you know, the Southeast Asian community. So it's just a reminder that, you know, every few years there's a group that's targeted. They become the black sheep of society, and you know, it seems that, you know, folks like Donald Trump can say something, you know, they're supposed to be leading a nation, but they're not able to acknowledge that all men are created equal and all men and women are created equal and that everyone respects dignity. But when he's saying things like that, of course, even if he says, well, only for, you know, a temporary amount of time, it sends a message that, guess what? The people that are even currently living, like, you can doubt them. You can doubt them, and you can, you know, with all of the rhetoric that's been going on, saying things like you could use, you know, bullets with pig's blood against Muslims, that, again, is just hate.
Yeah.
It's promoting hate.
Yep.
All right, Tahira Ahmad on the line with us. We're talking about Islamophobia, and Jeff has a question for you. I'm Catholic. I follow the Bible, not as well as I should probably. But, Jeff, you had a question about the Quran?
No, I didn't. I had two questions. Well, actually, one was a statement. One, I think that she should get her statistics correct when she quoted incorrectly before the break that the majority of crimes are committed by white men that are Christian. That is totally untrue. It is by African Americans and people of color. The majority of the crimes are committed. That's item one. So when I hear someone with those credentials that she has, and they're very credible, to make such statements, I begin to question the rest of the message. How accurate is the rest of the message? How sincere is it? Secondly, and final statement, is that I agree there is no room for that kind of behavior in this world against anyone. Couldn't agree with you more. But I would have to say to you this. Where are your leaders? Why are they not coming out more openly in public, in mass, to help the American people understand who they are, what they represent, and what they're against? This silence seems to be underlying, and it only adds to the problem that I see that the American people have with the kinds of experience that you just had on the airplane. And that's my statement.
All right, Tahira, what do you have to say about that?
Thank you for that, Jeff. Well, there are, as you know, 784 active hate groups in the United States. Hello?
Wait, Jeff.
What do you have to say?
All right, Jeff is just, he's listening. He turned his radio up. We were getting a little feedback there. Go ahead, Tahira.
Oh, okay. No, so I think you were thinking that I was referring to all of the crimes in the United States. I was specifically referring to hate groups. As you know, there are 784 active hate groups in the United States, and the FBI is charged under the Hate Crime Statistics Act in compiling all of those hate crimes. And so majority of those have been committed by white men, and that's what I was referring to. Secondly, I agree with you, Jeff, that whenever there is a community that is being, you know, attacked because, you know, people from within that tradition or who claim to be from that tradition are misusing and misinterpreting and causing harm to others, that those people must rise up. I agree with you. And you know what? There have been many Muslims who have. Unfortunately, we need more media coverage when that happens. So, for example, this rally that happened in which, you know, I stood up personally as one of the leaders in the Muslim community and many others from the Muslim community stood up to say, we do not stand by the acts of ISIS. We do not stand, you know, for, you know, the terrorism that has occurred. The Grand Mufti of Egypt, right after 9/11, who holds, you know, one of the basically kind of the authority within the Middle East, along with several other muftis. Muftis are kind of like, you know, the highest ranking officials of the Muslim world. They all put out statements. And unfortunately, you know, that needs to be publicized more. Just because it's not being publicized doesn't mean that it's not happening. You have individuals all across, you know, if you just go online, even social media has been a very incredible place where a lot of this activism is happening. And a lot of young people, whether it's through their tweets or through hashtag activism, they are speaking out against, you know, the kind of violence and hate that's being perpetrated under the name of Islam.
This is not fair because we are running out of time here, but a lot of people have texted in. Muslims have declared a holy war against the infidels. Some people have said there are things in the Quran to take care of non-Muslim people. Is that true? Does ISIS, for instance, follow Muslim to the Muslim faith to a degree and then kind of branch out on their own? Could you touch on that a little bit?
Well, all, you know, if you look at Judeo-Christian scripture, you're going to see verses in there that are far more critical of anyone who's considered the other, right? If you look
yes.
at some of these the scriptures, it's how you interpret scripture and it's how you exercise what you understand of scripture. And unfortunately, when you have folks like ISIS who have geopolitical concerns and they manipulate their concerns, and actually want to definitely mention this, folks who are worried that, you know, these people are against infidels, actually more Muslims, statistically, more Muslims have died at the hands of ISIS than non-Muslims have. So if anything, these people are actually hurting Islam and Muslims more than any non-Muslim. And that's a stat that, you know, anyone who has, you know, the ability to go check that and fact check that can do that right now. So that's something I want to clarify, is that these people are not against, you know, declaring holy war just against, you know, non-Muslims. They are actually killing more Muslims than non-Muslims. And unfortunately, Muslims are actually the first victims of the kind of terrorism that's happening all over the world. And of course, we face the backlash of it right here in this country.
Well, I don't know if it's going to get easier, but we are here to help spread your message. And please keep in touch with us if people want to follow you, Tahira Ahmed. How do they follow you, Tahira?
I have a social media page on Facebook, on Twitter. They can follow my Twitter handle, which is Tahira Ahmed 123, or they can, you know, add me on Facebook. And I'm more than willing to have conversations. Anyone who is, you know, willing to learn more, and I am willing to learn as well. You know, I thank someone like Jeff who called in. I think it's important for us to be in conversation and critical conversation, but be in conversation with each other.
Tara, thanks. We appreciate it. Best of luck.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Good luck to you.
Tahar Ahmad, helping clear up exactly what Islamophobia is and what we need to do to fix it. We'll take a quick break. We've got news coming up next. Bill and Monday, WGN.